Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. Joining me once again is my sister, Kay Kellum. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. Now, in this roundtable discussion, we are going to correct what some people might see as a bit of an oversight on our coverage, because we've talked about the Captain America movie, the second Captain America movie. We've talked about the first Avenger movie. We even talked about the second Avenger movie.
And we've enjoyed talking about all of the above.
Absolutely, absolutely. At some point, we will go through the two Thor movies, the three Iron Man movies. We've done Guardians of the Galaxy. But what we haven't talked about, although we've mentioned it in, I think, particularly the Captain America ones, is Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
And it's amazing, given how much I talk, that I have not talked about that yet.
It's staggering to me.
And especially given how much I like to spoil things during these discussions. It's amazing that I haven't said yet that this will be a spoiler-filled discussion.
It will absolutely be a spoiler-filled for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe Agents of Carter, maybe any of the cinematic films. Heck, maybe even for a couple of comics. Specifically, Battle Scars, the current S.H.I.E.L.D. Series, and anything else that really pops to mind in one of these discussions. I think by now, if people haven't realized, these discussions go where they go and we spoil what we spoil. We try to be fair and put that up front, but, you know, hey, it happens.
I was going to say, we'll try and limit ourselves to the Marvel Universe, but given Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. prompts so many comparisons over to Arrow and Flash, I can't actually guarantee and promise that we won't spoil accidentally over there, but we'll try not to.
Well, certainly there may be some comparisons to what's going on with Arrow, Flash, the upcoming Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl. Those aspects being just speculation, what we've seen through trailers.
Mm-hmm. I do want to make one Legends of Tomorrow comment. I finally did peek at one of the trailers for that, and one of the actors who I thought did a great job on the USA show Necessary Roughness is going to be on Supergirl as James Olsen. So I'm really happy to see him get cast. He was a very immature football player who needed a counselor to help him man up, basically.
What is that actor's name? Because he did look familiar. Of course, he also looks a bit like J. August Richards, who plays Deathlok in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And that is, yes, that is a lot of what he looks like. I cannot think of his name to save my life. You're going to make me pull out the...
We are here to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Marvel show.
I know, I'm sorry.
Different network, different comic book continuity, the whole nine yards. See, you already got us off track.
I did, I'm sorry, but I got excited.
Now, we finished up the second season, but since we have not done the first season, in this episode, we're going to do both. So expect a lot of rambling, a lot of jumping back and forth, as you've probably come to expect.
Me, Cad Brooks.
I'd have to look up his IMDb to see what else he's done.
Yes, you would. But anyways, that's the actor that I'm happy to see going over to Supergirl. Now we can get back to the Marvel Universe.
Now, speaking of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I had just showed you a image that I'd gotten from actually a coworker. One of the guys at the office, he emailed me about something a couple of weeks back. I forget what it was. Hey, what are you thinking about this? Did you see a movie? Whatever. And I had mentioned... Actually, what had happened is he had found this graphic on, I guess, CNET.com with here's a map of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it has kind of a film strip thing with like 19 things, the various movies where the S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes fit in, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was talking to him about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well as Arrow, Flash, and some other stuff. I think since then, he's pretty much mainlined most of Arrow. At least the first season or two is getting towards catching up to Flash. He's enjoying this stuff. And again, he'd been following the Marvel stuff. So
both Marvel and DC are just putting out some great live-action entertainment right now.
There is literally an embarrassment of riches to the point that, granted, we've now caught up on S.H.I.E.L.D., Arrow, and Flash. We're still half a season behind on Gotham. and haven't watched any of iZombie or Constantine, with iZombie being probably the next on the list even before getting back to Gotham.
And we have Daredevil to go.
And Daredevil, geez, yeah.
I'm very curious about.
So we have 13 episodes of Daredevil, 11 of iZombie, 10 of Gotham. That's more than a season, about a season and a half of television. Just left to watch for the season.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Now, again, 22, 23 or whatever episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. That took a little bit to go through. And we've been having some periods where we've just been incredibly busy and sidetracked with some other stuff. So we've gone through fits and spurts of we'll watch a bunch of stuff, marathon it, and then we don't get back to the show for a bit. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was one of those. And of course, where it ties into some of the movies like Age of Ultron, we intentionally pause.
Yes.
So, okay, we'll wait a few weeks, go see the movie when we get a chance, then keep going.
Mm-hmm. And that's a pro and a con of tying it into the movie, is making me feel like I want to pause at the right point, see the movie where I'm told it fits into the continuity, and not watch those episodes that I'm told come after the movie until I've seen the movie.
Well, it's funny because I've been watching some of the Super Sentai stuff, and those have their weekly TV shows, and by weekly I mean like 50 episodes, 52 episodes a year, and there is a theatrical movie and then a theatrical kind of crossover with the previous team that fit in the continuity. So there are periods where it's like, hey, go see the movie type thing, and then it's the movie's been seen, and usually I have to wait and go see it because I'm not in Japan, go figure. But I've often wondered, if I were in that position, how would that play out for me? And this is the first TV show where it's I should pause and go see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Second. First one would have been Power Rangers, actually, with the Turbo movie being in continuity for the TV show, but also happening over the summer when the show was on hiatus for quite some time. So with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. having those pausing points for Captain America Winter Soldier, for Age of Ultron, to a lesser degree, the Thor, the second one, the Dark World, or whatever. It's been interesting. I have had mixed feelings about S.H.I.E.L.D. pretty much since it started. I like it. I like some of the actors. There are other things where they've not sold me on the concept, the world, and aspects like this. I mean, we've had discussions a couple of times about how they just assume knowledge from the movies in the TV show. They're building a shared universe. I get it. There's some risk there, but there have been one or two times where it's like, if you hadn't seen something, it's like, well, this scene came out of the blue. What the hell?
Well, and my reaction almost from the start has been, I want to like it more than I do. I feel like there's something I'm missing, something I'm not getting that I want, and I don't know what it is. And just looking at this diagram, if you will, of where things fit in, I'm surprised to realize that the Avengers is so far ahead of where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. began, in terms of there's a movie between them. I don't think I'd realized that.
I really hadn't given it much thought. I don't think we saw Iron Man 3 in the theaters. I'm trying to remember. Anyways, I think for me, what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is missing is, while it connects to the films, the show itself, the team we follow, Agent Coulson and his crew, feel very disconnected from S.H.I.E.L.D. in that world.
Yeah.
They've got their own little plane. They're doing their own little thing. Only once or twice in the first season did it really connect back to the monolithic S.H.I.E.L.D. entity, Nick Fury and all that stuff. There are a few touch points here and there, and some subplot sort of deals.
Well, and from the movies, I always had the impression that S.H.I.E.L.D. was in support of the heroes. So for most of the first season, I kept waiting for a hero to show up.
I knew we weren't going to get the ones from the films.
Oh, agreed.
But the fact that we didn't get any, I mean, they could have taken some of the lesser run, easier to do on TV heroes and tied them in somehow. Now, by the time we got to the second season, we get some of that. I mean, first season, to me, it kind of breaks into the set stuff up, build things up, tie into the Thor movie, build up to Winter Soldier, which was a huge turning point for it.
I was going to say the tie-in to the Thor movie was a minor...
It was tangential. Oh, yes, this is happening. Go see the film.
My desk over at the university got damaged. Well, I know you had a desk at the university.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to Winter Soldier, which gave focus and meaning to some of the characters and to a lot of what was going on.
Well, that was one where they had an episode where things are happening, things are building up, characters go off in certain directions. Not the lead characters, but supporting cast. The movie happens. Those characters are now where they were going off to. Stuff happens. Hydra does stuff. Boom. Major turning point for the cinematic world. Come back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Things are just fundamentally different. There's a what happened kind of a deal, which plays out through the rest of the season. And I thought that chunk from Winter Soldier to the end of that season, very strong, very interesting.
Yeah.
They changed the DNA of the show. It introduced Patton Oswalt's character. Built some fun stuff up. Hydra versus S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. Then we get to the season break. And I think they used that time to rethink some things, retool some things. When they came back with the second season.
When they came back with the second season, I wasn't sure if they could bring Ward back. As one friend had put it, and I totally agreed with them at the time, during that last chunk of season one, they let the actor who plays Ward, Brett Dalton, I think is his name, they let him act. They let him have facial expressions. And he was sparkling on screen for those episodes where he got to be interesting.
He got a lot juicier of a role to play.
Yeah.
But turning him evil, essentially, or revealing that he always was, letting that come to the forefront, it allows a more dynamic character, a more fun character than the good guy usually can be.
Yeah.
And that's not the only show we've seen that sort of dynamic on. We've seen it on some others.
Yeah. I guess I was hoping during that break, they would find a way to have all that they had done with his character without him seeming to be Looney Tunes on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he became a recurring versus a regular in the second season and had a clear character arc.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it worked or not, you could argue. But it certainly, I think, there was a long-term plan for that character. Here's what we do. Here's how he ends the first season. Here's the transition he goes through second season. And sending him off in what seems to be a very clear direction for third season.
Yeah.
But with second season, from the first episode, I noticed some serious changes in the show.
Oh, definitely.
We got the Absorbing Man, the guy who could touch the materials, take those properties on. He was a Thor character, a comic book character. He was brilliantly done. It's like, wow, we're actually starting to get other comic book characters brought in. We had a few new agents to deal with. So suddenly the team had gotten past just the six people. Now they've got a base. There are a few other people. Patton Oswalt kind of vanishes into the background. That sucked. I think he brings a fun dynamic. And he's just a geek at heart. He's one of the people that, were I running a comic company or doing a comic-related movie, TV show, whatever, if he said, hey, I got some ideas, I would certainly sit and listen. Even if he didn't, I might ask him. You know, it's like, hey, you know, because, I mean, I've listened to him on some stuff on YouTube or whatever talking about, here's what he would do for two Unbreakable sequels. Or here's what ought to happen for this genre property, whatever. I mean, he's very creative, very geeky. And just gets it. And his character on S.H.I.E.L.D., just a lot of fun. But then we also got Bobby Morse introduced, Mockingbird. She's one of the Avengers in the comics. Granted, predominantly the West Coast Avengers, on-again, off-again wife of Hawkeye in the comics. A fun thing. And we never see her in costume, per se, but the S.H.I.E.L.D. outfit and stuff like that. So, to me, those were signs that they're trying to tie it tighter into the universe, flush things out more. But I felt they never, over the course of the second season, totally delivered on that. And that whole first part of the season is Skye finding her father. Will that happen? What's going on? and the continuing, oh, we've got this problem with Hydra, what's going on with Grant, fallout.
Mm-hmm.
We hit the point where the writing on the wall, literally, that Coulson's doing plays out. They get to the underground city, the big, you know, oh, we're searching for this kind of thing. That plot goes. And to me, that break at the hiatus there, major turning point for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we now have Sky becoming, you know, inhuman,
mm-hmm.
which plays out over the second half of the season. Trip killed off.
I hated that.
I thought that was a big mistake. We start to see some changes with Mac and a few of the other characters.
And I did not like the sudden change with Mac.
That comes in when we get back from the hiatus, and now the subplots or the plot lines we've got going on. We've met Sky's father shortly thereafter. He becomes a threat for a period, bringing in other powered people,
mm-hmm.
which frankly seemed more like circus freak type powered people
mm-hmm.
than superhero supervillain type powered people.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't work for me, even though one or two were from the comics. Angar the Screamer, stuff like that. But that then kind of shifts gears to, okay, now he's part of the Inhuman storyline, and those other people just kind of fade away. So again, shifting of gears there. But then the other thing they do is one of the subplots is S.H.I.E.L.D. versus S.H.I.E.L.D. Mac and Bobby are working for a different S.H.I.E.L.D. organization. And you could argue they played fair some of the stuff. They reveal later we'd seen scenes alluding to or at least misdirection thereof with Coulson and stuff early in the season. He's going off, he's doing stuff, you know, arguably recruiting. Oh no, he was lying. It's Project Theta. You know, and it got to where, particularly the S.H.I.E.L.D. versus S.H.I.E.L.D., too reminiscent of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
If S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't exist, S.H.I.E.L.D. wouldn't have anything to go fight.
Well, and the other S.H.I.E.L.D., the S.H.I.E.L.D. shaped like a S.H.I.E.L.D., objected to the S.H.I.E.L.D. shaped like a circle because it has secrets. A covert organization that does black ops operations has classified materials and secrets.
Yeah, they didn't know everything in a secret organization. Granted, a highly huge public secret organization, but...
But the people on a carrier at sea didn't know all the secrets kept in the land bases.
In a carrier hiding sensitive secret material.
Yes, yes.
There's a certain hypocrisy there. And a certain stupidity there. You're in a spy organization. You don't know everything. And you're upset because you don't know everything.
Yeah.
That just never really worked for me.
And you're upset that you don't know everything while you're deliberately keeping secrets and preventing the others from knowing everything.
Now, granted, Edward James Olmos articulating these things of his stand for that S.H.I.E.L.D. Fun. Great actor.
Oh, yes. He did it well.
But not the direction I felt they should have gone. It felt too reminiscent. It's like...
Yeah.
Halfway through the next season, are we going to get another S.H.I.E.L.D. versus S.H.I.E.L.D. or S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Hydra?
Yeah.
Another retelling of or retwist of this.
Well, there were times when I wondered if the S.H.I.E.L.D. shaped like a S.H.I.E.L.D. was simply a false head of Hydra.
Yeah.
You know, a mask on Hydra.
And how that just magically ties into the Inhumans storyline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they didn't seem to have a solid game plan to get what they where they wound up going.
Well, and his having the coins to give Xiaoying, which coins that should have been found in 1983 or 1986, something like that, except that the coins sounded more like they were from the 1940s. It just didn't quite make sense.
Edward James Olmos's character tried to give Sky's mother. Mm-hmm. How did he know they had value to her? Where did his intel come from? He was keeping secrets from us.
Yeah.
Shame on him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that this was bad episodes or bad story. There's a lack of I don't want to say continuity, but a lack of consistency.
Yeah.
And some of it was a lot of fun to watch. We get some great fight sequences, watching Sky's powers develop, learning about some of the Inhumans,
mm-hmm.
even some of the stuff with S.H.I.E.L.D. versus S.H.I.E.L.D. had some fun moments, some great story beats.
Well, and Fitz had some really great moments throughout second season, both dealing with the traumatic brain injury,
yeah.
which is one of the most common these days injuries for our soldiers to get.
Mm-hmm.
So it's becoming a very common plot line. And towards the second half of the season, you could almost say the writer seemed tired of dealing with it.
I thought it was good progression in the first half, particularly the dynamic between Fitz and Simmons. But then in the second half, there comes a point where he's just over it.
Yeah. And in the first half, Mac was really helping him heal well.
Yes.
And that's part of why Mac having a personality change in the second half of the season just didn't play well with me, is I enjoyed Mac the first half of the season better.
Mac had some personality changes and just going in different directions, motivation-wise, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Both Fitz and Simmons had, well, that seems odd. That wasn't how they were acting before.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was motivated through story points. Other times it's like, wait, they just turned on a dime and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, Simmons seemed to, they were trying to say she was affected by everything that had happened with all of Hydra, etc., etc. But Simmons becoming so clearly anti-alien based on Tripp's death, and based on what the alien DNA did to Sky, just seemed too extreme.
She always seemed like she was overcompensating for her last mistake.
Yeah.
Oh, tried to kill so-and-so, that didn't work. Oh, this person scares me, that doesn't work. You know, let's go this way, let's go that way. Mm-hmm. And I liked her character a lot first season.
Yeah.
I didn't like her character second season.
Yeah.
And again, it felt like there was a inconsistency in tone and direction of a lot of these characters over second season. Again, while it was still enjoyable, to me, one of the best characters was when they introduced second season of Hunter.
Yes.
Early on, he's just one of the new agents, and he's always going on about his beast of an ex-wife, how horrible she was.
Yes.
And we go through a couple episodes where we've got Mockingbird having infiltrated Hydra. Is she a good person, a bad person? She saves Gemma. Okay, she must be good. Gets to the base with everyone else. Only then we discover that's the hellish, you know, ex-wife he's had.
Yeah, it was great.
And Mac knows both of them and all this. I mean, the reveal of it was fun. And Hunter was one of those, can we trust him? Is he going to stick around or not? One of my favorite scenes in the second season was Hunter's been captured by
Mac.
Mac and the other S.H.I.E.L.D. has gotten free and
in a lifeboat from the carrier.
And Coulson's on the run.
Yes.
Coulson is at a beachfront resort, possibly Tahiti, who knows? That's a magical place.
It is.
And he's sitting there ordering a drink. Bartender's putting a drill. It's like, I don't need the umbrella. Just give me the drink. That's a lot of umbrellas for a tiny little drink kind of a thing. And then coming out of the water is Hunter, comes up to the bar. Give me a drink with a lot of umbrellas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just showing how different those two are from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, he says, Coulson, you know, give me the napkin, signs it. Here it is. I'm in, boss.
Yeah.
You know, with a whole, it was something that was all of maybe 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But it showed some cool personality and character aspects of Coulson and Hunter, how they're so very different and so much alike.
Yeah.
And it was just a little after, you know, at the end of the thing, end of the episode tag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stay tuned for another quick thing from S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, okay, commercial break, come back, get this, get the credits, move on. They've done some brilliant stuff from an entertaining television point of view. Parts of the show are just really well done. Other parts, it's like, just what are they thinking?
Yeah, well, the very, very final seconds of the second season with the fish oil, which is a supplement some people take over the counter, you know?
Well, before we get to the end,
okay,
let's talk a little about the Age of Ultron tie-in. We talked about a little on the episode about that movie, but I felt they had been setting up, oh, there's been experimentation on this stuff. This is what Hydra's doing. Oh, it's so bad. It technically ties into the movie, but then we come back and the episode afterwards is more explanation. Where did that helicarrier come from? Oh, that's Project Theta. It's things that were subplots, but if that movie hadn't have happened, they could have very easily just revealed Project Theta to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the stuff would have played. This is what I was keeping from you. Big deal, kind of a deal. So I felt there was a little hand-waving going on. It's like, well, we need a big surprise. we don't know what it is, and we'll just toss, oh, based on the movie, this is what we should do. Don't know that that's what happened, but it felt that way.
Yeah. I mean, they said that everything they were doing was building towards the movie. And in terms of they pointed the Avengers to Sokovia, and that's where the Avengers went.
They got that, but then afterwards, it's a, well, that happened.
Yeah.
And they were not there. I mean, if we had seen Patton Oswalt's character on the Helicarrier in Age of Ultron or some other thing like that, that might have been enough for me. But as it was, it's a, we got to tie in, let's pause for a little bit, much like the Thor The Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
But then where the series ends off with what's going on with the Inhumans and some things of that nature, the last episode, Coulson is referencing Secret Avengers, which Daisy Johnson, Sky, in the comics is a member of the Secret Avengers. The fish oil stuff you were alluding to is basically the Terrigen Mists crystal stuff is now seeped into the food supply to where we could have other people getting exposed to this and becoming Inhumans.
Or could they die is my question.
I took it as a riff on two storylines from the comics. One, the current stuff going on from, I forget which recent event it was. But basically, Black Bolt explodes the Tarragon crystals and stuff, and this big cloud slowly travels the Earth. People go through, much like what Sky went through, they get kind of cocooned, come out different. But the other story it's reminiscent of goes all the way back to one of the early Fantastic Four comics, where they're battling the Skrulls, shapeshifters.
Mm-hmm.
So they've defeated the shapeshifters. What do you do with them? They're dangerous. Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, hypnotizes them into thinking they are cows, regular cows. They live their life as cows. Specifically as cattle. That gets slaughtered, turned into meat, and eaten. So now people have eaten alien Skrull stuff, meat. And you wind up with, decades later, the Skull Kill Crew, which is people who have been changed by this process. Much like how I would expect in the third season, one of the subplots is going to be you get more enhanced people because of this fish oil stuff and the Cherrigan Mists. Oh, but they're Inhumans. Okay.
Hmm.
But they're also setting up a, let's have powered agents with the Secret Avengers stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they clearly set up Hydra's coming back.
Yes.
Going to the Hydra versus S.H.I.E.L.D. again?
Yeah, Ward has decided he's better off with the team.
And Ward is cool, but they've gotten rid of all the surrounding people that were fun.
Yeah.
Agent 13, was it?
13, 33.
33, whatever. Maya...
Stojan.
Stojan, who's also on Castle, did a great job this season as as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that gets brainwashed by Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, winds up encountering Grant and suffering those consequences.
Yes. She did great with that role. She really did.
I will say the second season had a more intricate plot structure and threads of storylines that crossed and stuff than the first season.
Mm-hmm. And I loved getting the story for why Melinda had the nickname.
Mm-hmm.
They gave her a great background, but at the same time, they seemed to be giving her a present that didn't really make sense to me. She was simultaneously supportive of Coulson going on the run and yet mad at him for keeping a secret from her.
Yeah.
And
but again, she works for S.H.I.E.L.D. and knows there are secrets, so
yeah, that didn't quite play for me. It seemed to me that she was kind of the ultimate company girl. She should have been one of the ones who was saying, you know, if the director marked something that classified, there's a reason.
Well, and there were times she said that. And it seemed like the main problem was that he was working with her ex-husband.
Yeah.
As anything else. So it's not that he kept business secrets, but he kept personal secrets.
Yeah.
And some of this is stuff that comes across as bad ideas, bad planning, bad execution, but it really comes down to bad salesmanship on convincing us these were good ideas.
Yeah.
And I do think with Sky's father and stuff, some of the zigs and the zags were just a little crazy and stuff. It's like, why is he going with these other powered people and recruiting them? Well, that dropped off quickly. What's going on with Grant and Hydra? That goes in a few directions.
The flip side, I'm so glad Skye's father went to Tahiti.
Yeah.
I thought that where they ended Skye's father was an excellent end for him.
Well, that was one where that had a good arc over the season, and it paid off. It resolved nicely.
Yeah. I thought that the revelation, I guess you would say, that he wasn't a bad person, but that he would do anything for the love of his family, and that his wife basically drove him crazy.
Yeah, we're supposed to think he's the nutty one of the couple, and realize, yes, but the other one's nuttier.
Yeah. It was fascinating.
Again, they had great actors. That was Kyle MacLachlan from Twin Peaks, among other things. His wife was, Skye's mother was played by...
Deshaun Locken, I think is her name?
Yeah, from Dollhouse. Joss Whedon, and this is done by his brother and some of the other people he worked in his kind of production crew or whatever, who he's worked with on, you know, Angel, Buffy, Dollhouse, you name it. You know, they tend to work with actors they know.
Yeah.
J. August Richards for Deathlock got a bit of screen time this season, as well as in the first.
And I liked he was him in Angel. Coming back.
Oh, it was great. He was a solid actor on Angel. Sure, bring him back. He's great to use.
Well, and the way they used him in this, it was well done. You know, in the way they brought him back as backup.
Mm-hmm.
The one man you need for backup. The only man you need.
Well, and there was stuff that played well in there, and I like how Joss Whedon, as a director, as a writer, has an ever-growing stable of writers and directors he's worked with, showrunners he's worked with, and actors.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, you know, it wouldn't be impossible to see, you know, if Nathan Fillion didn't have a show on with Castle right now, he could show up you know, an episode here or there of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, ooh, there's a perfect role. Hey, let's drop you in. It'd be fun kind of thing.
Now, how did you feel about Agent Coulson's Darth Vader moment?
I was wondering if you were going to mention that or not. I was doing a little reading on the web. And basically what happens is at the end, he catches the one of the Tarragon crystals or Terrigen crystals, whatever they are, and is starting to turn to stone. He gets saved by Mac taking the axe he's been battling with for the last, you know, fight scene, chops the guy's arm off. And I'm like, ugh, that's disgusting.
Thank you, Mac, for saving most of me.
And Mac sticks around as an apology for cutting his arm off without asking.
And I loved that phrasing.
Very Coulson. Did you notice in Age of Ultron that Ultron rips off one of Klaue's arms? Andy Serkis in the... Ultron is with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. They're in the boat. The guy who is the arms dealer, whatever, has the adamantium or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The vibranium.
Yes.
His arm gets ripped off because he kind of annoys Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it's two people who lose an arm. Now, if we look a little further back at some of the other Phase 3 Marvel stuff, well, you know, you look at the Winter Soldier. He's missing an arm.
We're very Darth Vader addicted, aren't we?
This was an intentional thing for the Phase 3. And not just Darth Vader, Luke.
Okay.
Luke gets his hand cut off by Darth. And then later reveals that he had lost a hand. This is something that is just across all the Phase 3 things, apparently. I'd have to reread that web article to know some of the others. But it's like, really? You're kidding me, right? Yeah. That's where they wanted to go as an homage or whatever to one of the great trilogies of our time. What I liked about it, though, is it gave an excuse for when Coulson, after they see Skye's father, Coulson and Skye go to Lola, his car. She gets to drive.
Yes, and I did like
that. He can't.
Yeah, I liked it.
But he trusts her.
Yes. Well, and they've always had that father-daughter dynamic.
Yes.
And his putting her father through the Tahiti project at her request, because she was able to show him, convince him that Xia Ying, who's now dead, was the actual...
But Coulson also convinced Skye's father to help Coulson save Skye.
Yeah.
Because they had a mutual interest in Skye's well-being.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so a lot of that does play very well and believably.
Yeah.
And again, it shows the relationship between some of the various characters.
Yeah. And I thought that his going with Skye to see her father and everything, I just thought that that was one of those great character moments for everyone.
Yeah. Well, and the show does a ton of great character moments. It's one of the things it shines at. And it does good stories. I just think some of the direction of the plot and some of that is where it needs some work.
Well, and I think that's why I was disappointed that just as they were giving Melinda this excellent, excellent background, I was so disappointed in what they were giving her in the right here and right now. I wanted what she was doing right now to be just as good as what they were giving her back in the past.
Yeah, I think there are times where they've only got so much really good material.
True.
And they've got a lot of characters.
True. But, you know, she was somewhat supportive, I'll say, of Simmons at the base.
Mm-hmm.
But she basically betrayed Fitz to protect Simmons because, well, Fitz isn't here.
Yeah. Well, and there was a few things with that whole bit with Fitz and Simmons and Fury's box that it's like, okay, I thought both characters did a little bit of an about face here and there. How did the fake box get created? When did some of this happen? That, not that they needed to spell it out for me, but they didn't sell it.
No, but that to me was a, okay, these two have gotten their rhythm back. And that was why I accepted it. Those two were behaving the way they did back in season one.
But I think they did that intentionally towards like, okay, coming into the second half of the season, this is where we've got to go so we can end where we want to. And they did a major, you know, twist to the whole Fitzsimmons relationship thing and status quo right there at the end. Mm-hmm. And the question is, do they address that, ignore it, or how does it pay off next season?
Yeah.
Because that's, again, a major thing that's going to go on there.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't address it, I would be disappointed. So I think they've got some really cool stuff. I think that certain things just kind of happen. Suddenly they go from, geez, we've only got the one Quinjet in the bus, to suddenly, well, you know, we got the helicarrier, we got a bunch of Quinjets. That's no problem. Oh, and we got this other thing out in the sea, you know.
Mm.
A little convenient and yo-yoing up and down as to just how powerful and resourceful S.H.I.E.L.D. is or isn't. Obviously, they've got more graphic designers than they need, because old S.H.I.E.L.D., new S.H.I.E.L.D. logos, geez, who would have time to paint all that?
I want to know how they made that really nice S.H.I.E.L.D.-shaped S.H.I.E.L.D. hanging on the wall out on the ship at sea, but that's just me.
They had paint.
Well, no, it was an actual sticking out from the wall S.H.I.E.L.D. It wasn't painted on the wall.
That's true.
They had a 3D printer or something on there. Or
they've got metalworks and stuff like that and spare time.
Yeah.
It's not like the world's falling apart a few times a month.
Exactly.
The fact that all of that happened with the other S.H.I.E.L.D. and there was no mention, no visibility of it really at all in the first half is what I thought was kind of jarring. I guess it's a good execution of what I consider to be inconsistent and sometimes a little weak and maybe not well thought out plots.
When I enjoy the show, I just keep hoping for more out of it. Every time I tune in, I want it to be better.
That's about where I'm at too. I'm liking it. I'm not loving it.
Yeah.
And it's one that's easy to stall out on because there are better shows out there.
Mm.
I'll keep watching it. I continue to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have higher expectations of it than it sometimes often delivers on.
Well, and I like the characters and I like the actors. And that's what brings me back, hoping that they'll be given good material and that the stories will come up to what I'm hoping for.
It's interesting in terms of the characters and the actors and stuff, because I agree, they've got some good stuff there. But what I'm really enjoying with some of these characters is more on the comic book side.
Mm.
Because a couple of months back, they started up a new S.H.I.E.L.D. series.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Coulson and his crew. But what it tends to be is Coulson and one of, you know, Fitz or Simmons or Melinda May. Don't think we've gotten Skye yet, although we got Daisy Johnson, who's an established character there. And basically, it's written by Mark Waid, who knows his stuff inside and out. In terms of continuity, in terms of characters, in terms of what works, what doesn't. But Coulson has the ability to form just ad hoc teams, drawing from wherever he needs to. If he needs a hero, he can pull the hero. If he needs a villain, he can pull the villain.
Hmm.
I've got to talk him into it sometimes. Hey, get out of jail early or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows the secrets. He knows how to manipulate people to get them to into the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So in one of them, it was, I forget which one of the members of the TV show, but the featured hero was the Invisible Woman. You know, another one had Scarlet Witch. Another one had, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's a fun mix of how would this character from the show, how would this long-term major, you know, character of the Marvel Universe, how would they interact? How would that play out? How would that work in this situation? It's almost a spotlight on one or two characters, a team-up kind of a deal, versus the ensemble stuff that we tend to get on the show.
Yeah.
And it's done in one stories versus episodes that have three or four major threads and stuff going through it over the course of a season.
I like done in one.
A lot to be said for that. And that was one of the main shifts in style between first season and second. First had ongoing arcs, certainly, but at least initially it was very much, this is the mystery we got to solve this week.
Yeah.
This is the thing we're dealing with here and now.
Yeah.
This is our mission. Second season, they got away from missions to, they have this grand war or battle they're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping things get a little focused, a little tighter on a third season, because I think they've got a lot of cool stuff they can do. They've got great actors and stuff to work with. But really, if I had to say the area that needs better work, the writer's room.
Yeah.
And they've got good writers.
Yeah, yeah.
But
focusing the stories and just bringing that up a notch would be nice.
But I got to wonder if some of it was Joss himself was sidetracked with overseeing Phase 3, the Avengers movies, and stuff like that. And if now that a lot of that is pretty much done, he could focus more input onto the TV show and get it to the caliber we kind of expect. Because it's a Joss Whedon executive produced show, but not a Joss Whedon show like Angel, Buffy, a Dollhouse, Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not everything we expect because his attention is elsewhere.
Well, I guess one of my questions would be, will Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tie in even a tiny bit to Ant-Man or to the Captain America that's currently filming?
I would expect Ant-Man is going to have happened kind of between the season breaks. It will get referenced. Whether any major aspects get pulled in, I would suspect not, but it'll get acknowledged.
Okay.
And I expect one of the main things with season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is setting it up for and tying into Civil War.
See, and the impression I was getting at the end of season 2 was that they were trying to make a dividing line between people who were okay with alien DNA
mm-hmm.
and alienness and people who were pure humans, basically.
Well, those who embrace and accept the enhanced, the powers, etc.,
mm-hmm.
those that are afraid of them.
Yeah.
It was one of the main themes, the concept of the list and things like that, over the second half of second season. And not knowing exactly the nature of the Civil War Captain America movie,
mm-hmm.
but in the comics, it was very much, there was a registration act. You have powers, you either register or you go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. jail happened to be in the negative zone, alternate dimension.
Yeah, okay.
Think Alcatraz, but nice. In a pocket dimension that's even more inhospitable.
Nice.
I expect there to be that sort of a, where did the rights of the people stop to protect the greater good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see some of that building up in Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people were experimented on. Ooh, they're dangerous. What about this? What about that?
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the Inhumans, that was a big aspect of second season.
Yeah.
I don't know when that Captain America movie is released.
Mm, good point.
It could take all of third season to set the scene for, and not even tie until fourth season, depending again when the movie is.
Yeah.
But I expect that to be the next major touch point.
Yeah, okay.
But I could be wrong. We could see fallout from the Ant-Man stuff in terms of just cool new tech toys because of the miniaturization technology and whatnot.
Well, for most of the second half of the season, Gemma was very anti-alienness. Yeah. And given where she ended the second season, that's got to be quite a quandary for that character.
Well, it's interesting because I think her shift to against the more supernatural, otherworldly enhancements, whatever, was a direct response to what happened to Trip.
Mm, yeah.
So she kind of, again, overcompensates.
Yeah.
She starts to get more accepting because, well, Skye's her friend, so she's okay, whatever. But then where they left Gemma's character at the end of the third season.
Second, sorry. She said she was more accepting, but she made those inhibitors, which didn't actually help Skye.
But didn't do it to intentionally hurt Skye either. She was trying to cure Skye because she, again, was at that point thinking all of this is wrong. But I think that that second half of the season kind of course corrected her to where at the end she was sticking up for the Inhumans. I don't think they did this. I didn't see this. This seems odd to me.
Okay.
So I think she was coming back to her baseline. But with where they left her at the end of the season and the direction I would expect them to go, and I could be wildly mistaken there, in third season, that seems to take that course correction into the other extreme.
Mm.
Being very pro.
Yeah.
You know, enhanced people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to shift with the wind.
Yeah. Well, and Fitz was very emotionally supportive of Skye and very much the, we just have to see what happens with you and deal with what happens with you and not react until we understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be good for Simmons as season three starts up, assuming Fitz stays consistent.
I could see their relationship third season getting very strong.
Yeah.
As he's there to support her in the way she was not there to support him.
Yeah.
So I do think they've got big picture plans.
Yeah.
But I think it's somewhere between the big picture plans and the writing in the individual scenes. Because I think at those two levels, they do really well.
Yeah.
It's just the consistency of how they plot out a season, some of the directions they go in, and some stuff like that. And again, I don't know how much of that is being at the mercy of the bigger cinematic universe.
Well, and going back to my comment on Ward... Ward being Looney Tunes is my objection to his character. You know, I like a lot of the things they did with him, but his being blatantly evil and Looney Tunes went too far for me.
I wouldn't say Looney Tunes, psychopath.
Yeah.
He sees right and wrong, he just doesn't really care.
See, and I liked it when he was misguided, misled, misinformed, when he seemed like someone who had never had proper role model and had learned during his time with Coulson, oh my word, if Coulson instead of Garrett had been the one to find me way back when, my life would be entirely different.
I don't know that Ward ever really had that moment, at least to the extent of, I wish it had been Coulson I had encountered.
And see, that's the moment I wanted him to get to that never happened.
Yeah.
That's what they stopped short. He seemed to see that it would have been entirely different and then go psychopath instead of having the revelation.
The minute, though, we got his backstory with Garrett and stuff, it became clear that, yeah, he's never going to be on the side of the angels. It's just not in him.
Yeah.
But we got some good, interesting episodes with Tim DeKay as his brother.
Yes. And I have to say one of my all-time favorite scenes of the whole season was Adrian Pasdar pulling a gun on his wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Adrian Pasdar's character of, he's not playing Thunderbolt Ross. He was playing, who was he playing?
I want to say it's a colonel, if that helps, but.
Shoot, he's one of the characters from the Hulk comics. I'm blanking on it. He's a known character from the comics. And he had a definite arc of not trusting S.H.I.E.L.D. to working with S.H.I.E.L.D. to trusting Coulson to, you know, stuff like that. I like how that kind of played out.
Yeah.
But again, that was a recurring character versus the main characters. So, again, I know these writers can do really good stuff.
Colonel Talbot.
Colonel Talbot, thank you.
You're welcome.
I knew it wasn't Thunderbolt Ross. Colonel Talbot worked for Thunderbolt Ross in the comics.
And I think it's entertaining. He is simultaneously, I guess, the voice on Marvel's Avengers Assemble for Iron Man.
A number of the people who are doing some of the stuff have had multiple roles and stuff.
I just find that funny.
Also on that cartoon, the one who does Nick Fury is, I think, Shea McBride.
Interesting.
From Hawaii Five-0. So, I like what they're doing on S.H.I.E.L.D., but I want to love what they're doing on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at.
And they have moments that really, man, again, some of the scenes, particular things here and there, just brilliant. They have others, it's like, really? You went there?
Yeah, and that's where I'm at with the Ward character. I get that more and more shows these days, they want to have an ongoing nemesis and stuff, but I just wish they hadn't chosen Ward in this show.
Well, and where they left off of him trying to get Hydra back together, starting with no resources and stuff, I expect before too long, suddenly Hydra's a viable threat again.
Well, he technically might have access to his family fortune.
Family fortune or Garrett's resources where Hydra was, or just other knowledge, or be able to steal S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he killed his brother. He should have inherited something.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I'll be curious to see where they go in the third season. I'm glad they get a third season, but it's a show that is kind of meets baseline expectations with plenty of room to grow.
It's a show I didn't think was guaranteed a third season, and that from based on my feeling of the quality of the average episode, and that disappointed me. I wanted to come out of the season thinking they were guaranteed a third season, and I am thrilled to know that.
Absolutely. And I think you could cherry pick stuff from the first two seasons and build up something that's like, wow, look at what they did. It's brilliant. But I think you got to cherry pick.
Yeah.
Again, the Absorbing Man and some stuff like that here and there were just some fun, great things. But again, that started the second season with certain expectations in my mind that they just didn't meet.
Now, how did you feel about where Reyna ended up?
I was fine with that. I thought when she became an Inhuman, I couldn't recognize the actress.
Oh, I'll agree with that. I was surprised by the makeup they buried her under.
Yeah, and I didn't think that part of her plotline played out a little too slowly for me in some ways and too fast in others. But by that point, they had S.H.I.E.L.D., new S.H.I.E.L.D., other S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
They had Hydra still.
Yeah.
They had the Inhumans. They had Sky's father and those people. They had Ward's crew. And there were like six different groups we're following.
Yeah.
So, and even with, you know, then different factions within some of those groups. So, her arc throughout the series was ironic because she was always trying to meet first season the prophet or the clairvoyant. And then she becomes clairvoyant.
Yeah.
Yet they never really touch on the irony of that.
Yeah. So,
I'm not sure where they thought they were going with some of that or if they thought they got where they were going.
Yeah, well, and the fact that she told Gordon that, you know, there would be fireballs from the sky and a S.H.I.E.L.D. plane would attack and he needed to go warn Xia Ying that if she was the one that met with the S.H.I.E.L.D. representative, it would go bad. And so Gordon goes and talks to Xia Ying and they come back and they say, we know you're a manipulator. We know you're lying.
Yeah.
And then things unfold the way she predicted. That, to me, was a turning point on the Gordon character. Because we realize, you know, he's in on with Xia Ying for whatever reason.
Well, I'm curious how many of those characters come back.
Yeah.
Because middle to end of second season, there was scuttlebutt about another Marvel show.
Yeah.
And my money was on the Inhumans.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like the way to go, but then there was the announcement that it would be, but turned out not to be, Bobby and Hunter. Okay, seems odd, but that could work. Then they backpedal on that and say, no, we're going to go with another season of Agent Carter, which I think was the right move.
Yeah.
But it also seems like they're flip-flopping. They're not positive where they want to go on some of this.
Yeah.
So I think there's some uncertainty, some either disagreement or, hey, this would be better, something that leads to a little bit of back and forth and zigzagging versus a very clear kind of straight through line.
Well, and I wonder how much of that is executives making decisions versus running things by test audiences.
I'm leaning towards executives at the above Joss Whedon level.
Interesting.
Because I honestly think, no disrespect to the head writers and stuff of S.H.I.E.L.D., but Joss Whedon has shown with Firefly, Dollhouse,
got a proven track record.
An incredible track record. He gets this stuff.
Yeah.
That if you just say, hey, go do what you do, and that'll be that.
Well, when Serenity was being made, a lot of the Browncoats were using the expression, in Joss we trust.
Yep. In Joss I do trust.
Mm-hmm.
He has not only got a proven track record, my understanding, his father has written for television, his grandfather's written for television.
Yeah.
It is, for all intents and purposes, in his blood.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say he can do no wrong. A couple of things here and there, it's like, it didn't quite work. But by and large, I think if his creative efforts were focused on this, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would just be knocking our socks off.
Yeah.
And again, no disrespect to his brother and the other people working on it. They're very talented. They've done, again, some great things here and there. But there's moments of brilliance and pretty consistent brilliance.
Well, and that brings up the other question, though, of how much of what we're seeing is a unified vision, and how much of what we're seeing is being poked at by other people saying, but you need to do this to make it tie into the cinematic universe, and you need to do this to get approval from so-and-so, and you need to do this to satisfy so-and-so.
I'm assuming there's the poking, but I don't know.
Because, I mean, in the end, television's a collaborative medium. That's what it comes down to.
But there is different types of collaboration.
And that's what I'm wondering, is how much of this is collaborative and how much of this is unified vision?
Many, many years ago, a friend and I were at San Diego, went to a panel. We knew some of the writers on it, and it was a collaborating thing.
Mm-hmm.
And both my friend and I came out afterwards and were talking about it. It's like the title of that should have been Collaborating with the Enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was very much of how do you get your brilliant ideas through the thick skull of that damn collaborator you've got.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't get the brilliance.
Mm.
And there's a certain ego involved with that. But I'll be honest, that I feel that way sometimes at work with the no, I know what needs to be done type thing. And the others don't. Now, whether that's arrogance on my part or not, I choose to think not based on hindsight later. Yep, it did turn out I was right, but I failed because I couldn't convince people. With something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're clearly not all on the same page.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the weakness. It's not that they're bad people, but it comes down to, do you have a bunch of people on the field with their instruments marching in the same direction or the right directions, or are they just kind of wandering around bumping into each other?
Well, back in the 90s, you used to be able to go up to Hollywood, and I forget what street it was, but you could walk down the shopping street and dart into these very souvenir shops, and there would be these little folding tables set up, and, you know, not supposed to be sold, but they'd be selling scripts from TV shows. And occasionally you'd find a writer's Bible.
Oh, I loved those.
Yeah.
If anyone knows of sources for that for current shows, Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, any of these things, please let me know.
They were fascinating to read because sometimes they would have an entire page on what the writers had agreed was the mindset, the attitude, and I want to say the stance of a character.
I've got a couple of them from various Star Trek seasons.
Yeah, so you would read this page and you would know, if I'm writing for Captain Picard, he's the kind of guy who, when he stands up, he straightens his shirt tunic.
Or it was more, he asks for everybody's opinion to confirm his decision.
Yes.
It may sway it, but he's not uncertain.
Yes. And they laid out everything about this guy. All the critical points that defined the character of the person.
What the writer needed to know to get it right. Now, what was interesting is in some cases, it was clear that even for the season it was, because it was written before the season, you look back at that season, it's clear they had changed their mind and just not updated the document.
Yeah, but sometimes you'll get one of these Bibles, and there'll be a character where there would be like three lines, because it was a brand new character, and they were just starting to feel it out, and they would say, you know, this is the new guy in the squad who's following everybody around like a puppy dog trying to figure out what's what. And that's all they've written.
It's interesting because for certain shows in a first season, you can look at how they've seemed to set things up. And then you look at a second season and they clearly retooled. Certain characters are gone, certain are added. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., same way. This is the cast we get for first season, the main crew. Melinda May, we get Fitz, we get Simmons, we get Grant, we get Skye, we get Coulson. You know, we've got our team. But then they need to bring in halfway through Trip.
Mm-hmm.
The next season they bring in Hunter. They bring in Mac. They bring in Bobby. You know, they change stuff up because they realize they have other needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Having rotating characters come and go works.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's to shore up the what we were doing just didn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're retooling, or we got to go this way. It's tough sometimes.
Yeah. I would be fascinated to see what the writer's Bible for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. says about some of these characters, and what it said season one versus season two and versus season three.
If any of the listeners live in the Hollywood, Los Angeles area, and have access to these sorts of things, or know where I could get them,
yeah,
please email me. Let me know. Again, as a process junkie, I love this kind of stuff. And there's so many TV shows going on right now. Hell, I would love to have the show guide, writer's guide for Veronica Mars.
Mm.
Certainly any sci-fi kind of tech show. Some of these I've already got, so don't just like go pick them up. Let me know.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get dupes of what I've got. It's a waste of everybody's time. But Supergirl, Flash, Arrow for the different seasons, Legends of Tomorrow, if one of those comes out. Just, again, the shows, some of the shows we've talked about and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I'm less interested personally in, say, Legends or Last Ship or some of those. But, Continuum, I'd love to see the writer's guide for that.
Yeah.
And again, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., what did they do first? What did they change to second? What's the third going to look like?
Well, because I would think that Melinda May, for instance, first season, second season, she was one of the most consistent characters.
Yeah. I think, though, with Fitz, what we would get first season versus what we get second season.
Dramatically different,
and
I
intentionally
would think.
So,
yes.
Because of growth of the character.
Yes.
These things are statements of intent.
Yeah.
You know? This is where we think we're going to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, that would clarify, potentially, some of the stuff of what I see as unclear trajectory and things like that for the show.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely, if listeners know where I could go find that stuff, be it online or wherever, please let me know either on the forum or by email. Very interested in that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that wraps it up for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Season 1 and 2.
Oh, because, you know. Because
we never got around to doing one before.
Well, you know, we do stay a tiny bit busy with the amount of television we watch.
Yeah. Well, again, if people have differing opinions on the show and stuff, post on the forum, let us know what you think. Maybe we just missed some stuff, or you've got a vantage point on this that we hadn't considered. Certainly would love to hear that.
I am going to make one more comment, actually. Going back to the writing on the wall, I did love, love, love when they got to one of the people who had been through the Tahiti Project.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I haven't been writing on the wall. I haven't been doing any of that. And they saw the model for the train.
Oh, yeah. That was Joel Greets, I think it was. I could get the name wrong. He was the lead on the 4400. Yeah, you see him doing this model train, and the camera kind of goes up and starts looking down at it, and we start to recognize, here's the thing.
The 3D model of the city for the train to go through. That was beautifully done.
Well, and it sold the concept of the city.
Yes.
So props to the prop department, literally. Yeah. They did a great job on that.
Yeah, everybody involved in setting that up. And it was payoff for all of the writing on the wall and the paintings and everything that had come before that.
That's one of the areas I think the show doesn't need to improve on, but would benefit from improving on. They don't have cool toys.
That's true. Something.
The icers just look like regular guns.
Some knickknack that I want to pick up and play with.
The equivalent of a sonic screwdriver, a phaser, an Omni, a whatever.
I always wanted an Omni.
Again, Voyager, the TV show from 78, 79, I think it was.
Manu Pelus.
John Eric Hexum. At some point, we may do that.
Oh, I'd love to find that to watch again. That was a great show.
I thought I had it on DVD.
Wouldn't surprise me. It was an excellent show.
So, anyways.
Okay, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Plenty of things for us to be watching and talking about on other stuff. We literally have two, three huge stacks of DVDs to go through at some point. This is going to be, I'm not even going to say a multi-year project to go through all of this. Multi-decade, probably.
There you go.
I mean, I could quit my job and stop reading comics and still have stuff to podcast about for a couple of years. Not that I'm planning on doing either of those things.
No.
But
we do plan to do some movies and some podcasts on them in like the end of July into August. So if people would like to suggest movies that we prioritize, definitely do that.
Absolutely. Do it for what you would like to see us do sooner rather than later, because it is one of those things that with the subscription box lights, the weekly comic spotlight, the preview spotlight, the Mayo reports, things of that nature, you know, we do no more than three episodes a week, and that's intentional, just so I don't go nuts spending all my time editing, and so you guys have time to listen to other stuff. You know, I could talk enough to do an episode a day. I don't think I could keep up with the editing on that.
We don't want to bore you nice folks to tears, let's be honest. But
again, there's other stuff out there, other vantage points.
Very true.
And I need time to watch stuff, read stuff, do things. But yeah, certainly on the prioritization stuff, weigh in. Because at this point, as we record this, and we're recording this a little early before we go on our vacation, I think I've got the next open slot, which I actually think I've just scheduled the recording to fill, July 31st. And if plans come to fruition and things play out the way I expect them to, should be a really fun episode.
Awesome.
But I don't know the next open episode I have even after that. Because we're going to have a couple from Comic-Con. We're going to have, you know, just, again, the various box lights, the Mayo reports, weekly comic spotlight, preview spotlights, a lot of stuff going on. So certainly people should weigh in on what episodes they're liking, what they want to hear more of, what we should prioritize in terms of TVs, movies, things of that nature.
Please.
Coming up soon should be Arrow season three.
Three.
And Flash Season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the next two we're going to do. When we ever get around to watching the rest of Gotham, we'll do something on that, probably. And same with iZombie. So now, anything else, or are we done?
This time I am done.
Okay.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.